Welcome back on this Wednesday hump day, the 15th day, the middle of November 2, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Call, and as you might have gathered by now from the intro, we're going to begin today with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And although this first story is mostly good, it interestingly also includes a bit of the bad and the truly ugly as well. First, a headline from the Daily Mail in the UK. Miss Universe owner has filed for bankruptcy just days before the 2023 pageant. The trans activist company behind perversion of the Miss Universe pageant into something that, well, let's just call it what scripture does, folks, an outright abomination, has sensationally filed for bankruptcy just days before the so-called pageant is due to take place in El Salvador. Thai native and trans activist claiming to be a woman now, Anne Jakrajutatip, acquired the event for $20 million back in 2022 from IMG Media and added it to the portfolio of the JKN Global Group. You may recall that between 1996 and 2015, the Miss Universe pageant was actually part of Donald Trump's business empire. And I can't help but think that, say what you'd like to about the man, at least he knew what a woman was. The bankruptcy comes, says the story, after the JKN Group missed a $12 million loan repayment. But still, they claim the event will go ahead as planned. If they were honest, though, nowadays they'd call it Miss Traniverse. And the even better news, folks, would be if it was a complete, well, it's already a disaster, if it was a complete undeniable failure, too. And on that score, I'll go ahead and drop the spoiler here, just so people don't tune in out of even morbid curiosity. There will be at least two so-called trans women attending this year, one from Portugal, the other from the Netherlands. And yes, there's a bad pun to be made here. Suffice it to say, you don't even want to look. From there, mercifully, we move on to the good and the bad. Courtesy of the Gateway Pundit, in what they call a now viral video, Nikki Newcomb Haley, the rhino former governor of South Carolina, and a joke of a so-called contender for the GOP presidential nomination, has called for a mix of the good, the bad, and the really ugly. First, the obvious and arguably good. This fits the 80-20 rule, folks. You mix a little bit of lie with 80% truth and get people to swallow it. In her case, it's more like mixing 20% good with 80% evil and seeing if they'll bite. First, she said, socialist media companies should be forced to disclose their algorithms to the public so that people can understand the basis of content promotion on the platforms. There's more to it than that, folks. And as anybody that's been involved in software development knows, there's something to be said for open systems. The Unix operating system is an open system. People who know software can look at it, inspect it, point out problems, and even advise, hey, somebody's trying to slip a back door in there. Imagine that. It doesn't make it impossible to do exactly what the FBI, CIA, NSA, and so forth have been doing for so many years, but it does make it at least a bit harder. The word you may have heard back before it became a joke was transparency. And of course, on the other hand, Apple, Microsoft, and Gulag, which owns Android, are certainly not. Oh yeah, and let's not forget while we're at it, and she's not calling for this, which is truly ugly, you know where there really should be transparency? In the software that does vote counting for what are supposed to be fair and honest elections. Hardy har har. Now, even if you're not a software expert, folks, and I've said this before, but it certainly bears repeating, anybody can do a simple code review, that is, if they would actually publish the so-called vote recording and counting software, and see whether or not they're lying to you. How? The concept is real simple. It's called floating point math, and it's an add-on, literally something that has to be put into the computer hardware or done with a software package to enable fractions, decimals, to be multiplied, divided, and manipulated. Fractions and numbers like 0.03159. And ask yourself, is there any purpose whatsoever to have those kinds of things in a machine whose simple purpose is to count and add votes one at a time? Well, unless you realize that's not the goal at all. Not if you want to be able to move a certain fraction, maybe even a programmable fraction of votes from column, well, let's just say column R to column D. Floating point math. And if it's in the machine at all, it means that somebody is a damnable liar and they are planning some really fine chicanery using exactly that which has no business when everything that's supposed to be counted, if you had honest voting, were integers like 1, 2, and 3. You get the picture. It would be kind of hard to hide that if there was actual transparency in the systems. Well, again, that's not what Nikki Haley is calling for, but it is why you're not even going to hear the media suggest it's a possibility worth thinking about. But worse still, we move on to the bad, and maybe even the ugly. Her second proposal called for mandatory verification, Achtung, of all socialist media users with their real names. And she called anonymous social media posting a, quote, national security threat. I guess it's okay to come across the border and do anything you blankety-blank and well want to, join up with your cell, and then you can do anonymous things like saying, hey, let's knock over a power station on such and such a date, but we'll use code words and make that really anonymous. No, no, she's not worried about that. The national security threat is a soccer mom somewhere calling out her local school board for wanting to put her unnamed son in a place like California where they'll cut off his genitalia and tell him, now you're a little girl. Maybe she can be Miss Universe if the pageant lasts that long. Or who knows? The mind boggles because examples abound. How about a woman who wants to post canning recipes in the fall and call herself Farmer Girl? Ooh, yeah, there's a national security threat, all right. But I could at least see why Farmer Girl might not want the feds knowing where she lives so they can come and steal all of her stored food. Haley claims to be scared, I tell you, about the influence of foreign bots from places like Russia and China. Not so much, though, from the swamp or the Biden regime White House or any of those that they control. If she really wanted to fix bots, folks, there's already software that'll help do that. I bet everybody listening has seen it at least a few times. Just not, it seems, where you really wish it would be used, right? But I can't help but think, if she really wants to point out a national security threat and get rid of anonymity from people that intend evil, let's start with the IRS and the FBI. Make those agents actually use their real names when they bust down doors or sign bogus warrants or don't even need a warrant at all. Oh, yeah, and while we're at it, I know this would be really cool. How about make them actually take an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and then go seek out others within those very same three-letter agencies that are defecating on that oath each and every day. On into another piece, the bad pushing ugly, Barack Hussein Obama. The guy with almost as many aliases as the scumbag that is now his little puppet in the White House took America far into shady territory, says WorldNet Daily's Bob Unruh, back when he was, well, at least arguably, the elected president. He took over the nation's health care system, lashed out at Christians that he called bitter clingers because they believe that Bible thing that he seems to hate so much, and stating for the world, this at least was closer to the truth, and he had a lot to do with it, that America was no longer a Christian nation. But then he promoted himself as supporting free speech, calling himself a near absolutist on the First Amendment. He just meant that he hates it absolutely, I think. Meanwhile, Jonathan Turley, constitutional law professor at George Washington University, who's testified many times before Congress on constitutional issues, called that claim correctly, folks, absolute nonsense. And he said that, quote, while claiming to be a First Amendment absolutist, Obama has supported massive censorship on social media and called for the media to frame news to better educate citizens, sick, and shape public opinion, said Turley in a recent column. For those of us in the free speech community, those positions make Obama's recurring claim nothing short of absolute nonsense, unquote. And remember, folks, Turley is a good guy, a constitutional scholar himself, and arguably quite a bit left of center, although nowadays it doesn't seem that way at all, given what's happened to a once free nation. For example, said Turley, there are aspects of the Obama terms that I have praised, but his record on free speech is not one of them. And he noted that Obama, in fact, supported a movement at the UN that would have criminalized worldwide anything that Muslims would consider to be a derogatory statement about Muhammad. For example, like a Christian who would dare to say that Muhammad was not a real prophet of the one true God. Or, closer to home still, somebody who understands scripture noting that Allah is certainly not the same as Yahuwah. Because the moon god Allah should never be confused with Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Well then, on we go to the ugly now, although this line gets blurrier and blurrier as you've seen. Courtesy of Jay Valentine via the Gateway Pundit. For the first time in history, he says, and this one is a little bit of a head-scratcher, folks, so you got to pay close attention. Citizens, he said, especially in Minnesota, seem to have better computer technology than Big Brother government. And he goes to a new video of Minnesota voter rolls, where some groups use fractal technology to identify anomalies in government voter rolls that have existed for over a century, eluding all of the obsolete technology that Minnesota at least claims they could possibly have brought to bear. Maybe it's just because they didn't want to. They'd much rather use high tech to track you and try to control your behavior. Searching the public voter rolls, they found the following. Voters living in UPS offices. Voters living in convenience stores. Voters living in an 800-square-foot house with 15 other so-called adult voters. Who knows whether they were alive or dead, which the health regulations would never allow anyway. All of these are shown in video after video, says Valentine. In 2021, voter integrity teams in 12 different states started using fractal technology, and as you can see in Minnesota's video, it makes a mockery of the state's voter rolls. And for the first time, he says, citizens now have in their grasp far better technology than government, at least than government wants to admit that they're using. Well, okay, for the purposes that citizens have been deluded into thinking, maybe they might. State after state, he said, is now showing dreadful official voter roll pollution via fractal technology. In Minnesota, they found 5% of all active voters, over 3.5 million of them, were, to put it mildly, a problem of one sort or another. That amounts to well over 172,000 voter issues, folks. And you may have heard about the old voters that are so old most of them are dead that continue to vote in places like Minnesota, but a lot of other states as well. Turns out there are 2,400 one-year-old voters on the rolls, too. Everyone knows, says Valentine, that it's dirty data or just outright fraud. And when Fractal uncovers it, you've now lost your credibility if you continue to claim you don't have dirty data. Well, folks, it was never about credibility. It's about seeing what they can get away with and knowing darn well that even if they can't, what are you going to do about it? And furthermore, they may just pull a New York and trump you to death if they have to. I mean, really, isn't that what gulags are for? And let's not forget, that's why they throw people like Owen Schroyer in solitary confinement for the crime of daring to say words like 1776, because they don't want people to know what happened that year anyway. And here's a little bit of the good that's mixed in with the, by implication, truly ugly. For the first time in history, concludes Jay Valentine for the Gateway Pundit, a technology now exists that people have access to that can stop voter roll fraud. Can't necessarily stop the shifting of votes from column D to column R if you allow electronic fraud. But at least on this score, they can stop the fraud before the election rather than losing litigation, which never really had a chance afterward anyway. All right, here's some really ugly that's not even remotely surprising, but at least the good news is it's finally coming out. This too comes from Jim Hoft in the Gateway Pundit. The Secret Service has finally released some FOIA documents that reveal, hey, remember that Coke? Was it Hunter's? Was it Joe's? Was it somebody else working in the crooked white whorehouse? So many Cokeheads in that place, it's probably hard to tell. But wait a minute, if we had DNA, we'd know, right? Well, that's why they lied about it. Contrary to prior claims, says the headline, the Secret Service may end up having to destroy the evidence, but they didn't do it yet. Uh-oh. That may turn out to be a problem. Well, wait a minute, folks. What am I thinking? That presumes there'd actually be a Department of Justice out there somewhere actually doing a genuine investigation of treason and other high crimes and misdemeanors. Yeah, fat chance. During his recent show on Fox News, Jesse Waters revealed that the Secret Service has been, I hope you're sitting down, misleading the public about that Coke investigation at the White Whorehouse. And according to over 100 pages of documents obtained through a FOIA request, the narrative surrounding the discovery and handling of the Coke at the White House appears to be fraught with, say it with me, folks, inconsistencies, cover-ups, fraud, and, of course, criminality. The Gateway Pundit reported back in July that hazmat crews were dispatched inside the entrance gate near the West Wing to investigate the suspicious white substance that later tested positive for cocaine hydrochloride. First, they reported that it was found in the library next to the candlestick and Mr. Green. Nope. Turned out it was on the ground floor of the White House, but not where they said it was, stashed in a cubby in a storage facility, not in the library. And although we may never know who actually brought the cocaine to the White House, because they claim it wasn't covered by cameras, imagine that. And on Monday, the Biden-Fuhrer regime released the first photos of the 2 grams of coke allegedly found in the summer after the Daily Mail's FOIA request. But according to Jesse Waters, all of this narrative raises questions, gee, do you think, about the accuracy and transparency of the truly Secret Service's statements. Further complicating matters, Waters highlighted discrepancies in the testing of the substance, with initial results indicating opioids and amphetamines, too, before being identified as, nah, it's just coke, which raises doubts. And these should have been raised long before January 6, 2020. Anyway, about the testing process, the subsequent handling of the evidence, and whether or not they pulled an FBI with it. No suspect has said to be identified. Allegedly, there were no fingerprints, no DNA, nor leads to be found.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And they didn't even interview the 500 potential culprits, because that would put a strain on resources that have to be used instead to take away your God-given, once constitutionally protected rights and throw you in the gulag. However, the FOIA documents suggest the presence of, three, not one, not two, three tubes of DNA conflicting with the initial reports of the Secret Service. Turns out that the DNA samples weren't only found, but also preserved, at least for now, in an evidence vault. So, asked Waters, where'd he get the DNA from? They got the DNA off the baggie. So, he says, the Secret Service lied, and so did the White House. Hey, tell me we're surprised, folks. They did find DNA on the baggie. The DNA has been processed and moved to an evidence vault for preservation. So, looks like the Secret Service, he continued, has an insurance policy. We asked the Secret Service for an explanation. They said, oh, it's secondary DNA. Primary would mean the big guy himself. I guess secondary means, well, fill in the blanks. In any case, they're not talking. And the initial Secret Service report clearly said there was no DNA found, no physical evidence. But the documents show they are, in fact, keeping a DNA sample in an evidence locker. And they may end up having to destroy it for obvious reasons. Because, as he put it, they have something we don't know. And the Secret Service told Primetime they may end up destroying that DNA evidence at some point down the road because, you know, I guess what we've learned, thank you, Hitlery, is that if you can't destroy the evidence, maybe you just have to destroy all the people that have anything to do with the chain of evidence. There's a word, though, that they use. You'll hear it again, I'm sure. Protocol. And I think what's really important, folks, is that means people who know the protocol get the message and know what they'd better do or else. Waters continued, saying Primetime asked the Secret Service, why didn't you take DNA samples from your suspect list? They said, well, we'd have needed a court order for that. What an irony, folks. They don't need any stinking court order to tap your phones, listen in on your refrigerator or TV, or cover up voter fraud. Well, says Waters, this tells me two things. One, the Secret Service didn't want to crack the case, or the Secret Service knew the coke was found in the library, and they put it in a cubby and closed the case. Award-winning author and investigative journalist Susan Katz Keating, who's covered military, defense, and security issues, wrote that there were three sources who independently told Soldier of Fortune, the very same name that arose from an investigation into the incident, but oh, if they told you who that was, somebody would be dead. They're, quote, not authorized to speak to the media, in other words. She says the name has been reported to the man masquerading as president. One of the sources even told Keating, if you want the name, ask Joe Biden. He knows who it is. All right. I'll admit, the fact that somebody told him doesn't mean he remembers who it is. And another said, oh, but don't worry, it's not the crooked cokehead son Hunter, because don't forget, in the occupied White House, there are literally legions of other suspects. And as you by now know, that's just the tip of the ugly. And since we're talking today about the good, the bad, and yep, the ugly, I'm going to conclude with this story from Jeff Thomas, the international man, entitled Running on Empty. Lou Rockwell had it up as well. And he begins by noting we've grown accustomed to regarding the U.S. as the most powerful nation on earth. And since the end of World War II, it's been the economic powerhouse that dictated terms to the rest of the world. War production created the world's most modern factories, allowing a post-war boom in manufacturing goods of every description. The fact that the U.S. held two-thirds of the world's gold by the end of the war enabled it to dictate that the U.S. dollar would be the default currency for trade. Later on, the creation of OPEC ensured that all gas and oil trade would be settled in the petrodollar, and the resultant overwhelming economic power enabled the U.S. to assume the role of the world's policeman, with a defense budget that equaled that of the next 10 most powerful secondary countries combined. But all that power led the U.S. empire to assume that it was omnipotent. By August 1971, as some of us recall, they went off the gold standard, reneged on the promise that the dollar was as good as gold, and over the ensuing decades, the U.S. has gone from being the world's largest creditor nation to its largest debtor. And the U.S. can no longer produce goods, as its ever-increasing union labor costs and regulatory burdens have priced it out of the market, even for local consumption. It's now dependent upon China, Mexico, and other countries for virtually all goods. And yet, the U.S. still tries to threaten those countries with controls. The U.S., says Jeff Thomas, is now a hollowed-out empire, and by any measure, it's a Goliath that's likely to fall in the near future. Recently, though, the above conditions have been exacerbated to a degree that's even more than ugly. Unprecedented in the post-war world. By March 2021, the U.S. made the fatal mistake of confiscating privately held assets of the Russian people. And although this was seen by Americans as just punishment for Russia, 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 how dare they invade Donbass, the rest of the world saw it a bit differently. The leaders of even small countries took note, realizing that the rulebook had just been tossed out the window. Private property? Not so far as Big Brother America was concerned. And that means you. If the U.S. could seize foreign privately owned assets in Russia, well, they could do it anywhere. And although almost no one in the U.S. noticed it at that time, we did talk about it here, folks, more than two-thirds of the world's countries quietly began to create treaties with China and Russia and the BRICS nations, as they're called, seeking to build a new alternative to the robber empire and the SWIFT system. Although this still appears to be insignificant, at least to Americans drinking the CNN Bud Light, the change has taken place quickly and substantially. Scores of new treaties are now in place, and more are on the way, and the world has now been rent in twain. Saudi Arabia, notably, moved decisively to shift its loyalty to China, along with other OPEC nations, assuring that the petrodollar will soon be no more. And as more countries continue to enter treaties, allowing them to trade in their own currencies, bypassing the dollar, that assures that the U.S. dollar, says Jeff Thomas, as the almighty fiat global reserve currency of the world, is on its way out. An entirely new global paradigm is underway, one that's not even in the news in the United States, at least as far as most Americans are concerned, and they're blissfully unaware that their country is now a house of cards, just waiting for a strong wind. Which has come up in the Middle East now in the form of a war that promises to break the bank of the U.S. The U.S. has poured 830 billion fiat bucks into the military-industrial complex annually for weaponry that's now outmoded, and in some cases it's been that way for decades, while other powers have continued to advance because they actually believe in something that used to be part and parcel of the U.S. economy. It was called innovation, the scientific method, actual engineering, and so forth. To the point where they today far outweigh the U.S. military, whether you're talking hypersonic missiles, EM capability, and perhaps any other technology outside of bioweapons and people control. And add to this, he says, the astonishing stupidity of American so-called leaders who chose this time to emasculate their own military. And no matter, he says, just how supportive a country may be of the dead end of gay rights and even worse now, transgenderism, a de-emphasis of masculinity in an armed force creates a military that, let's face it, no red-blooded man would want to be a part of. The U.S. military forces have, in fact, been gutted. They are unfit to fight, at least a real war, and for crying out loud, they're not intended to defend the United States anyway. Be assured, says Jeff Thomas, this is not simply a country experiencing a downturn. It's an empire in its death throes. To wit, the most prosperous cities, at least once upon a time in America, are in dramatic decline. Downtown areas are filled with the homeless, the drug addicted, the invaders, and let's not forget needles and feces in certain places. Those who loot stores aren't prosecuted. That leads to a crime epidemic that's closing entire blocks of previously successful shops, oh yeah, and creating a commercial real estate crisis to boot. Empty downtowns lead to an emptying of cities. Tens of thousands are being laid off, especially by banks. Competent workers simply can't be found. Some may have credentials but can't finish tasks. They maximize sick days and otherwise fail to show up for work. With the result of simple business tasks fail to be performed, deadlines aren't met, retiring older workers can't be replaced with anybody even remotely motivated to do so. Businesses aren't just chronically understaffed, restaurants can't serve customers, mechanics leave cars unrepaired, trash isn't removed, flights are canceled due to airline staff not only failing to show up, but in some cases, croaking because of poison pokes they were required to take, or if they wouldn't, they left and left a big hole. And that's not true in other areas of the world, primarily like in Asia, where communism is on the wane as opposed to the rise. Empires, as it turns out, do have a life cycle. Bottom line, he says, the first world, particularly the once mighty United States, is indeed running on empty and can be expected to go down, literally in flames. We're witnessing, says Jeff Thomas, the early stages of the collapse of the world's greatest empire. The trouble is, empires never go quietly. In every case, they attempt to hold on to their dying power through warfare. And if they can't find one, they'll create one. And guess whose rights and property end up among the first casualties? A dying lion, says the author, is in fact a dangerous beast. Pay attention, folks, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.